Hello and welcome to the Footvey English podcast in collaboration with World Football Index, a unique mix of fandom and journalism. Footvey English is your one-stop shop for all things Venezuelan football in the English language, from the men's to the women's and the domestic leagues to the national teams.
Today we are joined by Academia Puerto Cabello centre-back Carlos Rivero, the captain of the team and a recent Liga Footvey All-Star. Kaki, thank you very much for joining us. How are you?
Pretty good, Jordan.
You're somebody that we've had on the Footvey English podcast before. Last time to talk about Liga Footvey's preparedness for different kinds of foreign players in the league. But today we are going to be talking all about you, really, your career in football, but also what interests me the most, you as a person. I remember when I first started following you in social media, it was during 2020, the COVID season. And you tweeted about your absence from a game in Barinas in the bubble season because of a false positive COVID test. But it was your Twitter biography that caught my eye. It's changed now, but at the time it said something like person first, citizen second, footballer third. Do I remember correctly?
Yeah, it was.
And at the time I was getting a lot of my insight into Venezuelan football from the Paez family, from Ricardo Andretti, and from Ignacio Benedetti, three very cerebral people to get football information from. So your self-description stood out. What did you mean by that description? Because like footballers aren't renowned for their intellect, even though plenty of footballers are intellectual people.
Well, because I put my side first on who I am. I think the way that I see myself is more important than what I actually do. So it starts as I am as a person. How are my values, my virtues, and my moral? I think that's first. And I'm that person first, then I'm a husband or a father, or a footballer.
And is that an attitude you started your career with? Because you started as a teenager, you had a little bit of time in the US a semester before returning, and you've been basically a Liga Footvey starter since you were 18, 19 years old. Is that an attitude you began your football career with?
I didn't hear you very well the last sentence.
The attitude you have now and the attitude and description you just gave to us about how you order yourself as a person, is that something that you had installed in you when you began your football career, or is this something you've developed as you've got older?
Yeah, I have been like this since I was a teenage, maybe even a little bit earlier than that. Of course, I have been developing a new kind of moral stuff because I have studied to be a better person as well. People take time to be a better doctor, get better at their profession. And I take time for that too, but I also take time to get better as a person. How can I be a better father, a better husband, a better friend? All that involves being a better person. And I've been different from other footballers from other people since I was a teenager. I was a little bit more impulsive when I was younger. Now I'm more calmly a person that I was. I tried to change that in the past years. Because I was very impulsive, I was very, I don't know if it's a right word being said, like a little bit conflictive, but people might think so I try to change that.
As it, people found that you sort of sought out conflict, that you were a confrontational person?
Yeah, well, I don't know if I'm a confrontational person, but I don't really get shy when I have to tell somebody else what I think I have to tell, because it's not because I think I'm very brave enough or I'm better than them. It's because my parents told me that I cannot be silent by anybody else, because that's not something helpful for life. So I think I have more fear for being silent than to speak to somebody else, and the other person think that I'm even insulting them by telling them the truth. I mean, I have to tell them, the other person, what I think in a very respectful way, but sometimes people don't take that very nice, you know?
Yeah, no, I understand. And when I was prepping for the podcast and taking notes, obviously I went back to your Twitter profile to find the quote in your bio to see it's gone. And now it just says Jugador de Academia Porto Romeu. Is there a reason you changed your Twitter bio from that quite profound statement?
Well, because I trying to get away from social media. Not entirely, because it's a way to be informed about what's happening in the war, especially here in Venezuela, that we have a lot of casualties, a lot of trouble. But I'm trying not to get in too much into the media. I was a very active person on my, especially my Twitter account. It was a little bit polemic. I used to like that. I did it in purpose a lot of times because I enjoy it. Now I try not to be like that anymore.
Yeah. And I remember even how you were perceived when you were at Caracas Football Club in itself was polemic. As you know, I watch a lot of the games from the Barra. It's where I enjoy watching football from in general. It's a release from working in football, which is, you know, how I view all the other games. And I remember speaking to people in the Barra about you. People would ask me, you know, who's your favorite player, or what players do you like? What players do you think are good? And when I spoke about you, it would always divide opinions. Some people were like, yeah, Kaki's great. And other people were like, yeah, he's a good player, but I don't like him because. And normally that I don't like him because was because I think they knew, or at least they felt, that you saw football as good as you are at it. You saw football as like not the most important thing in your life, that it's a profession like other people, like you say, are doctors or journalists. Football for you is your profession, something you're obviously very passionate about and good at. But they obviously, Barra members and also football fans around the world that are fanatics, that are passionate, live it. There's a disconnect from that. They almost expect the person on the pitch to bleed the shirt in the same way that they do as fanatics. So you even polemic in that regard.
Yeah, my philosophy is about stoicism, and one of the main things that the stoicism tries to teach is that we don't get passionate about something in an extremely way. You know, I was very, very passionate when I was younger. And I've been changing that because I try to get my feet on the ground, and it has helped me to develop a better performance when I play. It has increased my level because my brain is really focused on what I actually have to do rather than thinking about emotions and all the proto-passions. Like stoicism says, that we feel, when we feel something, we let our proto passions to take power from us, you know, to control us. And I try to not allow that, and it has been a really huge help for me and for my performance. And I think that it was better for my teammates and my clubs as well, because if I have a better performance, everybody wins, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I actually had it in my notes to to bring up the Stoics and your philosophy or your adherence to the philosophy later in the podcast. But to touch upon it, I was speaking to Jesus Yendis after the All-Star game, and obviously you played the second half next to each other, Yendis at left back and you at left-sided centre back, whereas you're most normally used at the right side of centre back. And Yendis said playing with you, and he also name-checked Sagiomo. He said playing with you two was like a dream, not in the sense of a dream come true, but like a dream to play with, because you were just constant. Like you weren't, your approach didn't change based on the emotion of the game or the moment of the game. He could give the ball to you and know that it was safe with you, whether there was pressure or no pressure, whether the opposition had momentum or you guys had momentum. And, you know, this was even in the context of an All-Star game, not a fully competitive game. But what I wanted to address next is, we've spoken professionally and personally many times before. And I'm not embarrassed to say that, you know, you're someone I admire and respect a lot. I've started 2 journals recently. I've always tried to keep like a diary before, and I normally run out of steam after like a month. Like I feel like it's too self-indulgent. As a writer, I'm always like writing with the expectancy that someone's going to read it. And I don't think that's a productive way to sort of approach a diary. So I always ended up stopping after a couple of weeks. But I've started 2 journals, and one of them is a guided journal. So you have like guided entries for the first 30 to 45 days. It gives you something to write about to sort of help you get into the journalistic style, the journaling style. And the last week I was doing an exercise on role models. And it was asking you about asking me about the role models I've had in my life, but also like present ones and ones that I could have like perhaps in the future. And I wrote myself that, you know, Kaki Rivero, you is somebody with personal, creative and professional traits and reasons for me to consider a role model. He's a loving and attentive father. At least that's how you come across to me. You're a calm and considerate Stoic, a fantastic athlete and footballer, and disciplined with your physique, your mind, and your beliefs. So as well as the Stoicism, correct me if I'm wrong, but when we met about 18 months ago, not for the first time, but for the first in-depth time, we spoke about other areas of your life that I questioned you about, including like your diet. So at the time, I don't know if you still are, but at the time you were following like the keto diet. Is that something you still do now?
Yeah, man. Thank you for your words. It's an honor for me to hear from you, because I think you're a nice guy, and you are also something I can admire too, you know, because of your life, the way you are trying to reach your goals and your dreams about football. It was something that you weren't like looking for very directly, but it get to you in a, I don't know, in a rare way, and you are like taking that opportunity to get what you always like, you know, and mm-hmm. that's something that I love from people, that when they try to reach their dreams. And about my diet, yeah, I keep going with my ketogenic diet. Sometimes I almost convert to a carnivore diet.
Mm-hmm.
I only ate meat maybe 2 to 3 days on a week, straight days. Well, it's not a secret that I changed my diet, not just for a physical improve, but a psychological improve. I have read a lot about how food can make us feel better. It depends on what we eat, or maybe worse if we eat crap.
Yeah.
And because I have read a lot that the stomach is like our second brain. There are a lot of hormones that are produced over there, and it guides us on the way we can feel through the day, you know? And I only have tried to experience that by changing my diet a lot of times. I'm very open-minded on it, and it has been the the best formula for me until now. Maybe I can change it in the future, I don't know, but I feel great with doing what I'm doing right now.
And a lot of people, well, I've not known a lot of people to do it, but the people I do know that have adopted the keto diet, and people that I've seen sort of like testify or speak about it on social media, a lot of them look quite ill, to be honest. Like, they look gaunt, they look very tired. A lot of them will sort of lose color in their face. And Jordan Peterson is one of the guys that began with the keto diet. He's been on a carnivore diet for a while. He doesn't look healthy. I've known people in the flesh, people that I've used to work with on the keto diet, look very unhealthy. But most people that look unhealthy doing it are still sticking with it. You don't look unhealthy, and you're obviously capable of doing the diet whilst being a professional athlete. Did you find it hard to transition? And like, are there downsides to the diet? Are people doing it wrong that I see? You know, because I see enough people look unhealthy to sort of put me off of it. And in the 1 month I tried doing it myself, I was incredibly irritable.
Yeah, I think that people might say that it's not for everybody. I think it's this diet is for everybody. It can be for everybody if everybody would like to make it from their own. But you have to follow some steps that I learned after I transitioned to keto or carnivore diet. Because I try to do most of the things by my own. I'm trying to learn a lot by reading by myself on internet papers and whatever I can get information from. And it was a rough transition because I didn't know what I right now know. If I would implement what I know now, it would be easier for me to get that transition. It was all of self-discipline. It was all from my brain because it was hard. But after a few days that I kept the plan, I feel better than ever, and I still do.
Mm-hmm. And did you find yourself sort of turning to this diet happened at a similar time in your life that you sort of started to turn towards Stoic philosophy? Did the two happen in tandem?
Yeah, I think after, I don't know, when I get back to Caracas, especially after the COVID emergency that was in the world, I start to asking myself a lot of questions. I got into a special time of my life where I feel that I wasn't doing good enough, or I thought I wasn't, and I started questioning myself a lot. I tried to search new options to improve my life, and I get with this and also with Stoic philosophy. I know and I follow media a lot of Stoics that follow some life rules like I do, with my diet, with my sleep, and all that kind of stuff. And I see them that they feel good with it, like I do. They seem healthy. Because I don't know, if somebody doesn't look healthy doing this, something is wrong. Mm-hmm. I don't know if internally or they are doing in a wrong way, but it has helped me a lot. I haven't feel better than this moment, not even when I was 20 years old. I feel with better energy, with better brain activity, you know. I don't feel that cloud that maybe you can feel during the day because you get tired or something like that. I recommend it to everybody, but it requires a lot of discipline, a lot of will to get it, and it's gonna cost at least the first, I don't know, 2 to 3 weeks, but
Yeah.
after that, people might be better. I'm
And
pretty sure.
both changes you've made in your life in these recent years when it comes to like the keto diet and also Stoic philosophy, they're quite rigid things with like quite disciplined outlooks, quite disciplined rules almost if you want to live by. How have you found implementing that into your life when you've got a wife, you've got two kids that you live with? Because like for me, that's been one of the biggest challenges when I try to make these like life changes. That's what I find like the most difficult. Like for example, the food, like you have to eat alone, or and with the philosophy, it can, I think particularly if you go into sort of Stoic philosophy, which for anyone listening that doesn't know about it, I do advise you like look it up. Is quite a change from like particularly modern life and modern thinking. And it can be hard, I think, for people around you, particularly those that you live with, to sort of adapt or understand. How did you find, you know, how as a family did it have an impact or did it not?
Maybe they will adapt, but they won't understand if they don't want to get deep on the philosophy. It's hard. Every change is hard, especially when you live with, when you have a family. About my diet, well, I have been very strict with what I eat since I was a teenager. I have followed different diets, so that has been not a really big issue for me because my wife knows that I have that rule in my life that I don't eat really bad. Now I think I'm eating better than before, but it hasn't been a great issue. But about the philosophy, yeah, it's hard because the main idea of the Stoicism is the pursuit of tranquility. In the words is eudaimonia is the word that they used to express tranquility. Is what they feel is most similar to happiness. So that's what I try to reach, tranquility. Everything that gives me calm, that makes me be calm, is what I feel is close to happiness. So that's why I try not to get passionate about about anything, not even bad or good. And it's hard to make people understand that because people in their majority are very emotional. They get very excited when something good happens to them, in the same way when something bad happens to them. And I try not to behave like that. It's hard. I'm not going to be a perfect Stoic. Even a Stoic knows that we're not going to be a complete Stoic, because the only true Stoics are the what they call the sage, because they were true believers about goddess, about gods, and they call them the sage. So they say that they are the only true and complete Stoics, and you are just a person who are trying to reach during his entire life the complete Stoicism, and you're not going to achieve it, but you have to get closer to that.
Yeah, I think although the overlap or the connection might seem very tenuous, I think like a lot of the football phraseology that we've seen in recent years, in post-match interviews, and perhaps in coaching sessions, like I had a coaching background, not a professional coaching background, but I had a coaching background. I've watched coaches here in Venezuela in training sessions, Chita being one, Kike being another. I think the phraseology of football actually like sort of lends itself to an introduction to Stoic philosophy. For example, you hear players saying like, we're taking one game at a time. Every game's a final. We're not going to get too down about losing, we're not going to get too high about winning. One of my favorite managers growing up, he's not a big name, but Nigel Adkins was the Southampton coach that took us from League One to the Premier League. He's got like a sports psychology background and is quite a philosophical guy. He used to say, after every game, we draw a line under the game, we take one negative and five positives, and we move on. A lot of this is like naturally occurring in football for the benefit of having short-term goals to aim towards a long-term objective without getting carried away by the long-term objective. But I think a lot of footballers don't have a deeper level of reflection in them and do get too caught up in the emotion of when they're in the team and when they're not in the team, for example. Was there a particular turning point in your football career where you felt you needed something more, and what was that? You're a player with 400 games in Venezuelan football, over 11 years. Like we said last week, you're one of the only players that were eligible for the last All-Star game in 2012 and this one last week. How have you handled the ups and downs?
Well, I think that one of the things that I like most about this season, it was about how to handle those ups and downs. I was a person who brought my anger from games through my house, and it gets me a lot of trouble with my family. And at some point, I understood that cannot be the way to handle a family or even to live, you know? So that's something that I like about stoicism. And now I lose a game, and it's not that I don't care. It's like I don't feel bad about it. I understand that something went wrong, and now that I have to get better at something that we didn't do good, and that's it. I don't give a lot of attention of more importance that it really deserves, and It has made me a better person, a better father, a better husband, because when I step out of the pitch and I see my family, it's another thing, it's another story, it's about them, it's not about me, and it has brought to me a lot of happiness in my life because of it.
And do your immediate family, your wife and your children, do they take an interest in your football career? Do they come to the games, or is it easy to keep things separate because they're not too involved?
They always follow me. I like to see them in the stadium. I always try to reach when I'm in the line with the national anthem. I try to reach to the public, to the fans, and it's a way to support me, you know. And I feel great about it. I feel happy that they can see me and they can follow my process, you know.
Mm-hmm. And with this natural sort of overlap into football in the conversation, I wanted to ask you directly about you know, your football career and where you're at now. I've said before, I think it was at the beginning of the season when you signed for Puerto Cabello and the season started so well for you guys, that having you and Cheetah San Vicente, the head coach, in the same team in Venezuelan football is almost like a cheat code. You've got one of the most intelligent head coaches, if not the most intelligent head coach in Liga Footbay, and one of the most intelligent, if not the most intelligent captain on the pitch. The combination seems unfair to the other teams. What's it been like to play under Cheetah, not once, but now twice?
It's a great pleasure to be under Cheetah guidance, you know. He has been a really important person in my career. I think I have learned a lot from him, how to handle a locker room, how to handle even a club, because every place that Cheetah goes, he handles not just the players, but the entire club structure. I mean, with the fans, media, or even the board. He's like the center of the team where he coaches, you know. And like I tell to the youngest guys, if you don't learn here about football, you're not gonna learn in another place, you know, because Chita is it's not just a coach, it's like a professor, like a teacher. He teaches. He not just say, hey, do this or do that. He says that you have to do this because of this and this and this, because it would help us a lot in this aspect or in this point. And I think it's easier to understand when somebody speaks to you like that, you know.
And you've been together before at Caracas. You got to the final of the 2021 campaign, missing out to Deportivo Táchira in the final, finishing runners-up. And then you had a season apart from each other. You stayed with Caracas for one more season, and Chita went off to Zamora and pretty nearly much replicated what he got at Caracas with Zamora, and very impressively, considering the state Zamora were in when he arrived. The players that he had at his disposal, a real overachievement, I think. And now you're reunited at Puerto Cabello, and I know you've told me that you're excited for the project at Puerto Cabello, not just this season, which has been very, very good, but there's still time to go. But into the future, what's so exciting about the project that they have going on at Puerto Cabello? What can you tell us about the project?
Well, what is more exciting about this project is that this can be by far the closest thing to be in a top club, because of the new training center. I mean, it's an impressive thing, you know. It's the most important way to say to a player, hey, you are in a great club. We're going to treat you as a professional, so you have to behave as a professional. And not everybody does that. And that's the closest thing to be in a top club. Because I have been part of a club that have trained in another club's facilities, and I can tell you, with plenty of security, that this is way ahead of a lot of training centers in South America.
And at Puerto Cabello, there's a lot of, correct me if I'm wrong, but from the outside and knowing what I know on various levels about Venezuelan football, there's a lot of big personalities at that club, in the playing staff, the coaching staff, and then further afield within the club. How has Chita handled that, and how has the club approached that in this season? Because from an outside perspective, alongside having lots of big personalities at a club, it's a young club, but also it's a club that's quickly changing what it's capable of achieving.
Well, it's quickly changing because of Chita and because of all the staff, the board that are making a great job. You know, but Chita has been, I think, the key or the driver of the Ferrari, like they say here. They are creating a Ferrari here in Venezuela, and they need the best pilot, and that is Chita, you know. He has been in a lot of clubs and good clubs here in Venezuela, and also in the national team. He knows how to handle this impressive structure, and he's trying to make things right over here, you know, to create an identity for the club like Caracas has it, you know.
Mm-hmm. And both you as a player and Chita as a coach have experienced good campaigns, particularly for Venezuelan clubs, but good campaigns in continental football. We saw this season Academia Puerto Cabello were in the group stages of the Sudamericana, but to be fair, did really struggle and not get the results that I'm sure you guys wanted. But also the results that I think Venezuelan football in general need the teams to have when they're competing continentally. Next season, you're going to be in the Copa Libertadores, 50-50 chance on paper at least of being in the group stages of Copa Libertadores. What can change from this year to next season to have better results in group stage football on the continent?
The experience. It's ironical that people say that we have a great team and we didn't compete continentally speaking, you know. But last year with Caracas, that it wasn't a good season, we compete on the group stage of Libertadores. If we would win against the strongest, we would be in the next stage, you know. It was about a goal. And it's about what Cheetah is trying to create here. We have to create a winning mentality, and that the player that comes to this club, he knows that he has the pressure to win every time and to have a great performance despite the circumstances. It's like to create a brand like Caracas and Táchira, you know. Caracas is a brand. It's a huge brand because of what they have achieved through the years, how they handle the club institutionally, economically, and the facilities, you know. They were the first serious club in Venezuela, and that creates a different aura from Caracas to the rest of the other teams, you know. It's not the same way to talk about even Academia Puerto Cabellos, and when you say Caracas, is in another step, a bigger step than other clubs, and that's what they are trying to create here.
And a couple of questions that I wanted to finish with was about what's left of your career, what you want to achieve with your career, but firstly, what you want to and what Academia Puerto Cabello want to achieve with the rest of this season. The format of Liga Footbay, although it's changed slightly from season to season over the past 4 years with COVID, with the number of teams in the league, both having effects, one thing that's still a constant is there's sort of like a delay between what can be achieved in terms of Academia Puerto Cabello qualifying for the final round and then the actual final round beginning. Because you were so dominant in the first half of the season and have remained very competitive in the second half of the season, Puerto Cabello's place in the top four has already been secured for a few game weeks now, and there's still three more games to play. As a team and also as a coach for Cheetah, how do you approach that in terms of staying motivated to, you know, still win the next game, still achieve? Because ultimately, although nobody that plays football from amateur level to top ever wants to lose, very hard to have the right mentality when in reality you could lose the last seven games of the season and you still would have qualified for the top four.
Well, the mentality has to be that you have to get to the final round in a great shape, you know. That has to be the mission in these games. And if you want to be a competitive team, you have to be competitive with yourself first. It's not like they change the tournament in the middle of the year, you know. It says the rules before you start, and you know you have to do during the year to get to the point where you want to be. In this case, we want to be champions. We think we're capable of achieving it, especially considering who is getting the vote. In this case, that's Cheetah. He makes every team very competitive, despite the player that he has in the squad. And we think we are able to get into the final at least, and after that we have to win it in order to get our first start in the t-shirt.
Yeah, and you said to me just over a week ago in the sort of post-match interview we conducted after the All-Star game that something that you want to still achieve in Venezuelan football is to feel the success, the satisfaction of winning a league title. You've won one before, but you said it had been around 8 years and you want to experience that again. But in your way is going to be at least Deportivo Táchira, who are on a 19-game unbeaten streak, and then two of most likely Caracas, Carabobo, Metropolitanos or Portuguesa. Any combination of those four teams can make up the top four. Two of them will miss out, two of them will qualify. Who do you fear the most in terms of opposition to winning the league title?
Well, I think the hardest games has been against Caracas. They give me a really hard time when we play against them, despite we have a positive record in the season 2-1. But it's where I feel that we have not been so much superior to the other club, you know. Obviously, Táchira, we couldn't win, we couldn't beat them. It was also hard, but I felt that it was harder to face Caracas. I think that they are the most difficult team for us, at least. But I felt the results says that Táchira was the most difficult team. You know, they were the most difficult. We could beat them. But on the pitch, I feel that our hardest game were against Caracas.
And past the end of this season, what do you want to do with the rest of your career? I've asked you numerous times for professional reasons, for personal reasons. You've got nothing really left to achieve in Venezuelan football, in all honesty. Maybe experiencing getting out of a group stage in Copa Libertadores football. And obviously the aim of any player in South America is to win the Copa Libertadores. But in the terms of realism, there's not
if we can get to maybe if we can get into the next stage of Libertadores, it would be a really pleasing goal for me, for my career. I would also want to be champion again because of what I tell you, and because it would be a different experience if we are champion, me being captain, it's going to be a different experience. I would like to live it. And I would also like to play it outside of Venezuela. I think that's is something I want to achieve, that I feel I'm capable of. And I want to try me to be if I'm able to play outside of this league.
And you're a very reflective person. You're someone that, you know, considers where they are in life and where you want to be. Have you looked beyond football and what you want to do after your playing career is over? Do you see your future in football furthermore, or have you got other plans?
Well, I'm trying to have a second choice besides football. I'm preparing for that. I also want to be part of football, but obviously outside of player position, you know. I would like to be coach. I like to be on the bench, to try to read the games, to see what is happening, how can you fix it, how can you solve a specific situation during the game. In the past few years, I've been thinking more as a coach rather than a player when I'm playing the game. And because I try to read the match in order to see that if I have a similar opinion about what's happening with the coach.
What do you imagine a Kaki Rivero team to look like in terms of how can you envisage a football team head coached by yourself to play?
Well, I think that depends on the players. I have to adapt to the profile of the player that I have on the club. But if you let me choose the players in a way that I can guide them on what I want, it would be something very similar of what Chita is doing, but it would be like Antonio Conte style. It's like it's a positional game. It's like the way that Guardiola plays a positional game, but obviously it's not about possession of the ball. It's about keeping the positions of the players and make some move in order to get the right space and to get the ball there in order to hurt the rival. Yeah, you see, I like a lot Conte, how he how you can see how you can see that it's a Conte team. You know, if you watch a game and they don't tell you, hey, this is Conte's team, you either recognize it because you know how it plays. I like that style, or the way that Germans play 4-2-3-1. I think is my favorite tactical position in the pitch. I like with really fast wingers with a lot of speed and on the transitions. I like that style, but I also would like to handle the initiation of the play from behind, from the goalkeeper. It's one of the things that I like Conte the most. He practiced that a lot. You can recognize miles away how his team start the play.
And I remember you told me, I think this was in a personal conversation, that as a player, Maldini was the player that you looked up to when you were learning, and a player that you've tried to emulate. And of course, he was a master of positions. There was some crazy stat, like he made less than half a tackle per game because he was always in the right place. He said something like, if you needed to make a tackle, you already made the mistake. Thank you very much for your time. I really enjoyed speaking to you, as I always do, and it's going to make for a fantastic podcast episode.
It's okay, man. It's always a great pleasure to talk to you.
And hopefully we'll speak again soon. Good luck for the rest of the season.
Okay, see you, man. Well, I'm going to Caracas on Friday and Saturday. Maybe we can meet over there.
Yeah, although I don't like the idea of an early coffee on a Saturday, so maybe we can meet in the evening or after the game or something.
After the game.
Okay, perfect. Okay, well, let's do it. Thank you very much.
Bye, Jordan.